Shirley Jones, this is your life.
That I dream may come true, and I'll come back to you.
Hello world, hear the song that we're singing. Come on, get happy.
Hey, this is Danny Bonaducci, and you are listening to the Sean Squad Society Podcast with your hosts, Cindy, Doris, and Dane.
Is that the phone I hear, Cindy? We have
somebody calling?
Callers. We have a couple of callers calling in. I see our lines blinking.
Oh, I wonder what that's about.
Well, we're going to take those calls.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. This is exciting.
Hi, this is Kristen from the Pop Culture Preservation Society podcast, wishing a very happy birthday to Shirley Jones, my Madam Librarian, my Shirley Partridge, the mom that everybody wanted, right? We'll forever love her. Happy birthday, Shirley.
Hi, this is Carolyn from the Pop Culture Preservation Society, and I wanted to wish Shirley Jones a very happy 90th birthday. My all-time favorite memories with my dad and actually involve Shirley Jones. Watch The Carousel every time it came on TV. My dad loved that musical, and we both would always end up teary-eyed at the end every single time.
Hi, Shirley. This is Janet Connell. I run the Sean Cassidy Fan Convention Facebook group for Sean. I just wanted to tell you on behalf of myself and everyone in our group, we hope you have a fantastic and blessed birthday. Happy birthday!
Welcome to the Sean Squad Society podcast with your hosts, myself, Cindy,
Doris,
Dame Madonna,
where we invite you to share in our enthusiasm and reminisce about all things Sean Cassidy.
From his teen idol days to his recent adventures back on the road again.
Please join us for the stories and memories that connected us to those happy days that helped create the Sean Squad Society podcast.
We did part one of this two-part episode celebrating Shirley Jones.
Yes, part one was about her early career.
Yeah,
how she started.
We really talked about
where she came from.
How she got her start as a little girl singing in church in Oklahoma, how she connected with Rodgers and Hammerstein and all of her movie musicals that were like the beginning of her career. And we left off, I think, after talking about her movies with, you know, the singing and dancing and all the fun there. She had The Courtship of Eddie's Father, of course, which was not a musical. And she had Elmer Gantry, which wasn't a musical. But we left off talking about her career with movies, where it was at after the singing musical.
And you know what? I think she really actually won the lottery with all this, because think of how it started for her. You know, this wasn't the path that was expected. It was just kind of, you know, there for her. So it all worked out for her in the beginning.
Yes, it was great for her story. And then Sean even said recently that it was because she was on that motion picture to begin with Oklahoma. So I felt pretty proud to hear that. Yeah, he recently said that, that began her career.
She's very proud of that. Mm-hmm. It was long hours, like we said. You know, it was a lot of work, but proud of it.
Yeah.
But it led to Jack and it led to her sons.
Here we are today. That's what we're going to continue talking about. Her marriages to Jack Cassidy and Marty and her sons, including David. And we're going to talk a little bit about where she went after those movies. What was her career after that?
What was she doing?
Well, I know her love story.
Yes.
At least just the beginning. I just know the first part of that with Jack.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit when she was, she did the movie Oklahoma, but then there was a stage production that went overseas to Europe and they were in Paris. Uh-huh. And this is where Jack joined the team. So he was in Oklahoma with her with the traveling production. And they, you know.
They warned her about this guy that was going to be playing Curly.
Yes.
And they said, you're going to think he's handsome and you're going to think he's talented, but do not fall in love with him. Well, she didn't think that would happen because it didn't sound like her. But then she saw him and he had that beautiful white blonde hair. And then they said he had the hypnotic blue Irish eyes.
Yes.
And that it wasn't just his looks. But on top of that, he was so smart, knew about fashion, and he liked to compliment her. And then as she listened about him, she was like, wow, even his dad was an engineer. And then she listened some more and she found out that when he was 11 years old, he was already working jobs. So she was building that little respect in him so soon. And then she heard that he had started Broadway when he was like 16 years old.
Oh,
yeah.
He started on stage very young.
Uh-huh. Yes. And then she wasn't prepared for how much she was going to like Jack. She found out as listening to him, she thought he was an amazing performer, an amazing singer. Of course, he's going to turn around. And of course, compliment her on her singing. And then he went on and on about this and that, but he was so polite. He was such a gentleman. And if you girls were to think about the perfect date, what would it be?
Dinner and dancing?
Well, that's what this was, because they sat down. Well, on top of that, they're sitting there having dinner and they're looking out the window. And guess what they see?
The Eiffel Tower.
Eiffel Tower.
Because they're in Paris, right?
Right.
Yes, Paris, France. This is like the most romantic date anybody could have. And they weren't even trying to have a date. And they spent all this time together and danced all night. And she said he's just such a gentleman to her. And then they piled up in the cab. I think it was like 5 a.m. And they were getting ready to pass over the bridge before going back to where they were staying. And Jack said, hi, would you like to get out and walk the bridge? Well, she's not going to turn that down. That sounded so romantic, you know, with the way Paris looked, people riding around on their bicycles and just getting up in the morning. And Paris is a romantic city.
Yeah.
She never wanted that to end, that walk. That was like the best romantic walk. Well, when he finally got her to where she needed to go and they were separating from having such a fun night, she wouldn't kiss him. And she only let him give her a little tiny butterfly kiss. What do you think he said? He said, I'm going to marry you someday.
Yeah.
And then he left.
And then he left.
To me, so she just thought he was so neat, but he was the guy.
Yeah. And apparently this tour was part of a tour called An American Salute to France. So this production was scheduled to go to Rome and then London. So they were in Paris when this all took place, this whirlwind date.
Night, this beautiful romantic date.
Oh, man.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you're right. Their friends were like, please don't marry him. He's going to break your heart. You're going to be in for a terrible time. Please don't fall in love with him. So everybody's pleading with her. Don't do
it. She didn't think it would happen either. She's like, whatever, you know?
She's young, you know, her mind's not thinking that way.
Yeah.
But man.
But then you got that Jack Cassidy charm coming at you at high speed.
Yes.
That meant so much to her. Even to his last day, she still, you could tell she still felt that. It never went away. It's true love. That, girls, it's like the most amazing date. Guys should learn from this. I know it's probably mostly girls that listen
it's
to this.
It's kind of cliche, but it works. I mean, it is. Eiffel Tower in the background.
Oh, my gosh.
Dancing all night. I'm going to marry you someday. It's kind of cliche, but it happened.
He pretty much proposed to her because that was like the perfect time to propose to her. But the only thing is they weren't even a couple. So that was kind of ironic.
Very ironic. And then they were together ever since.
Yes. Yeah.
I believe they finished off the tour. They came back and they ended up getting married August 1956.
It was the next year.
Because didn't you say that they opened over there in Paris? And then one year later, August 1956, they get married?
August 6, 1956, yes, was their wedding day.
So obviously Jack knew what he's talking about.
And Shirley went along with it.
Yeah. She surely did.
She couldn't resist. She just.
But her mom didn't like him. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Shirley's mom said to Jack after they got married, she said, "Jack, how many other women are you going to see?"
And, oh, no.
And Jack says, "Don't worry, Marge. I'm not seeing any, but I'll find one soon." And Jack said it, you know, pretty matter-of-factly.
Like being kind of sarcastic, but like tongue-in-cheek, like, yeah, maybe I am going to be seeing some other.
And he was telling the truth,
But girls, on top of that, it was still true love because at that last moment, he tried to stay with her even at his last day of being alive, the last moment of being alive.
Yeah, they kind of went back and forth their whole relationship.
They had a very rocky, stormy relationship. And I guess throughout the whole thing, they went back and forth and had some separations. I think I was reading a little bit. I read just a little bit that they had a separation and Shirley didn't see it coming. Up out of the blue, Jack used to call her Mouse and he said, he took her to dinner again, an Italian restaurant. And he said, "Well, Mouse, I think we need to try a separation."
Yeah, this was in January of 72. This was during the Partridge Family.
Yeah, the Partridge Family was on hiatus.
Yeah.
And she said she tried her best to hold back the tears. She walked out of that restaurant alone.
She asked why. She didn't know why. She was trying not to cry, and she asked why. And he said he needed to live by himself right now. He didn't want a divorce. In her book, it says, "Mouse, I need to live by myself right now. I don't want a divorce. I just need to be by myself. I just can't be here for the kids and for you anymore. It's an age thing," he said. So what is this, a midlife crisis?
Midlife crisis. Jack Cassidy was being a man. He was doing what men do at that age.
Probably.
He was on.
Shirley did ask if there's another woman. And he said, "No, there's not. I just think we ought to try a separation and see what happens." And at this point, they've been married 15 years. So this is their first separation.
And we all know it's no secret that even though it may not have had a name put on it at the time, Jack Cassidy suffered from different degrees of bipolar.
Right.
So maybe he was going through one of his episodes.
But it wasn't diagnosed yet, right?
Right, exactly.
It was there?
In the early 70s, they weren't even quick with that diagnosis like today.
No, and he probably didn't know. I mean, this is talking about what's in his head again, but he probably didn't understand why he felt like that.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Yeah, maybe not. Yeah, because he couldn't figure it out either. But she said she was devastated that she truly loved him and was happy with him. So
yes.
And after the separation, they did get back together again.
If you looked at it in a kind of a sense that those separations were probably Jack going through his down. Because if you think about bipolar disease, it's ups and downs.
Right.
And Jack went through his downs and they had their separation. And, you know, it's kind of a shame that they didn't have the medication and the knowledge that
I
they have
they
today.
Don't you think with them being that way, that in a way, it made their relationship more passionate when they made up?
Well, yeah, she did mention that in her book. He came back and they were passionate again. Yes.
There you go.
And, you know, you cannot deny that heat, that passion that they
no,
have.
No, and Shirley loved that with him. She loved it.
So, of course, she welcomed them. Because in her, whoever knew what her defense was, she just needed it. She needed that from Jack Cassidy.
Exactly.
Haven't you ever heard the saying, you can't live with them, but you can't live without them?
Yes.
On December 11th, 1976, Jack called her one more time. It was Patrick's birthday in January. So they were talking about his gift, that he wanted this certain bike or whatever that he wanted. So Jack said he would try to get it for him. And then that next night?
Pretty much that same night, because Jack wanted Shirley to get together for a drink.
Right, which she turned down.
And she turned him down.
Yeah.
He said something like, we had the best love story ever, something. I can't quote it. And she said, I think about that every single day.
Well, he told her, I've got the Christmas tree up. So why don't you come over and have a Christmas drink with me? So she sensed that he didn't intend for them just to have a Christmas drink together. She figured it would be more, but she was seeing Marty at this time, so she did not go over there. She says, I can't, Jack. He says, you mean you don't want to? And she didn't answer him. They kind of left it at that. So, yeah, but he says, don't understand, Mouse. We had what dreams are made of.
That's it.
That was the saying.
That's the quote. And didn't she say something like, I think about that every single
day? Yes, she said, those were the last words Jack Cassidy ever spoke to me. She says, I know, Jack. I think about it all the time, I said, and I still do.
Yeah.
But I wanted to ask, how did you feel that day you found out about the fire?
Okay. I'm glad you asked that.
That was December 12th, 1976.
I remember it. I remember it because for some reason I was into Tiger Beat, but Sean wasn't out yet. So I think the girls at school had Tiger Beat at the time.
Yeah.
And I was just skimming through it. I hadn't homed in on any one particular person.
Yeah.
And I remember before the story was in Tiger Beat, it was on the news and everything, and I said, Jack Cassidy? The Circus of the Stars, Jack Cassidy?
Well, I thought of David because of the Partridge Family.
And then I thought, David's dad?
I felt bad for David when I heard it.
Died in a fire?
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that.
Yes. I think I saw it on the news, and I was kind of heartbroken. I felt really sad.
Yeah. Very sad.
But you know what I wanted to mention? You know, at the time he passed away, Shirley wrote this in her book, that at least Jack had died knowing that his career was at least on the upswing, because he had been nominated for an Emmy for his role in the TV production The Andersonville Trial, and he had co-starred with Paula Prentice. I remember that name.
I remember that name, Paula Prentice.
And he was in a series with her called He and She, and he finally just recently made two successful movies. I don't know if you heard of the Iger Sanction with Clint Eastwood?
No, I never heard of that one.
And there's one called W.C. Fields and Me?
Yes,
I do
remember that. That's the movie I remember Jack being in.
Oh, okay.
That's the one.
Yeah, he played his idol, John Barrymore.
Okay. Drew Barrymore's grandfather, John Barrymore. I think.
Right. So then she said the kids could at least take comfort in that Jack had died seeing his dreams of movie stardom, you know, on the verge of fruition, that this was going to be going up for him. Shirley also said that Jack had a fear of growing old. He didn't want to look old or be old.
If there is a lack of a better term, some sort of bright side to this tragedy,
right?
He didn't grow old. He kept those great looks. He was only 49.
He was only 49. Yes. Yeah, only 49. But let's move on to the next husband, Marty. She met Marty back in 1974. So it was the summer of 1974. Jack and her were on the verge of a divorce. She accepted it intellectually, but still unable to accept it emotionally. She was depressed. She was feeling low. But then she went to this worthwhile cause. Michael Landon was having an art exhibit at his house in Beverly Hills.
Oh.
So, yeah. So she thought she would go. You know,
Little House on the Prairie, Michael Landon.
Yeah, yeah.
Little Joe Bonanza, Michael Landon.
But she did go to this thing and she left early and, you know, she was leaving and, you know, she walked to her car and Marty came around the bend and bumped right into her. So, of course, he started talking to her and everything. He's born in Brooklyn. He started in the sitcom called I'm Dickens, He's Fenster. Did you ever hear that?
Never heard of that one.
I think that was with Burt Reynolds.
That one went right past me.
It was like a comedy series.
Okay.
He did that. Yeah, he had a great sense of humor, but she knew that he had a nervous breakdown when he was on the Johnny Carson show one time. I don't know what year that happened at, but she kind of had a little bit of background of him and stuff. But he was funny, so she liked the comedian type person.
Here's the thing. I remember knowing the name Marty Ingalls. It was not like, who the heck is Marty Ingalls? But I never knew why I knew Marty Ingalls. He's just one of those Hollywood names you know.
Well, he was the Pac-Man voice. Remember the Pac-Man?
Right, but I didn't know that. I just found that out right now.
Oh, okay.
So how did I know? But you remember back in the day, there was Hollywood Squares and all these game shows, and they did celebrity, even though sometimes they were B-list celebrities.
Yes.
I think that's where I knew the name Marty Ingalls. He was on these game shows.
Okay.
Like Hollywood Squares or Match Game, where they would put the celebrities on the panel to play the game.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I mean, they all did that kind of thing back then.
Yeah.
They went on these shows.
And that must be how I knew the name.
Yeah, right.
I don't know any TV shows he was in.
I know, and then people asked her, so what did she see in this guy, right? And she kind of gave this answer. She said, both men and women adore Jack, okay? But not as much as Jack adored himself. But Marty's major problem was always that he didn't have any self-worth. In contrast, Jack had too much.
Oh.
So this was opposite.
So she was trying something different.
Yeah. So this was opposite. So she said, besides, what the world doesn't see is that Marty has always taken good care of me. So he would pay attention to her. He looked into her history. He studied up on her. He gave her gifts that she would like.
Yeah.
You know, her favorite color was green.
He was determined.
Yeah. He would bring her a salad. You know, he'd bring her things to the where she was on set.
Yeah.
Doing different things. He would come up in a motorhome.
He would drive up in an RV.
Yeah, he would drive in an RV. He had brought her salad and some champagne for lunch from her favorite restaurant. So he did all these things to win her over, of course, you know, giving her gifts all the time. I think I saw a picture of Christmas one time and the whole room was just gifts for Shirley.
Yes, she was sitting on the floor next to him and they have on like this mock tuxedo or something, some funny suit. And the floor is covered with Shirley Jones Christmas gifts.
So he was crazy with gifts and stuff. He's always generous doing it that way. So in a sense, he was kind of opposite of Jack.
So wasn't Marty Ingalls Jewish?
Yeah, he was.
But he didn't seem to bother her. He wanted Shirley Jones. He was going to do Christmas, whether he did it or not.
Yeah, right. But he was bipolar like Jack, too. But I guess in a different sense.
Yeah.
But she said she was never attracted to the norm. She always wanted someone who was the opposite of her.
You know, but sometimes we get together with the one that we feel, what is it, makes the rest of us. You know, it completes us.
Yeah, completes us.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right. So on November 13th, 1977, Marty and Shirley were married at Hotel Bel Air in California. And this is at the height of Sean's popularity.
Yes. That picture 77? Of that wedding day is all over every. If you haven't seen that picture before, just Google
Sean
it.
Sean gave his mom away.
Yeah. Didn't you tell me David didn't go to that wedding?
Yeah, I think there was already something starting to happen with Marty connecting with the kids. So, yeah. I guess they separated in February 2001, her and Marty. So, you know, there's
So how long were they married?
Well, actually,
77,
35 years, I think in total.
Yeah. Oh, that's a long time.
Yeah. I think it was 35 years, but they had problems. Of course, there was friction between Marty and the boys, you know, back and forth with that. Yeah. So Shirley was in the middle of all of that. So she was trying to handle that. And
yeah, I didn't realize it was so long that they were married.
You know, it's just amazing to me. With two wackadoo husbands and trying to handle everything she had to, living and working in Hollywood, which in itself from what I'm reading mm-hmm. and hearing all my life, it's no picnic.
Right.
This woman stayed normal. Not one time. You know how you read the tabloids or hear?
Oh, that's true.
Like yeah. Access Hollywood or ET over the uh-huh. course right. of your life? Not once have I read or heard Shirley no. Jones hooked on pills or Shirley Jones in Betty Ford Clinic or Shirley Jones anything. Yeah, not once.
But remember, she is a small town girl and she wanted to keep that. She kind of kept that.
A lot of them were small town people when they made it to Hollywood and it ate them alive.
Yeah.
But Shirley Jones had this strength. I love her so much for that. That strength and that wisdom, that knowledge, that stamina to take her boys and raise them to be good, honest, strong, healthy men, despite the fact that they have wackadoo role models.
Yes. I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. But she also writes, too, that it was hard for Marty to be a stepfather because he didn't have any kids. So
right.
He didn't really know how to handle this. So it was hard for him, too.
And by the time he moves into the picture, they're old. I'm not old, but Sean's already 18.
Right.
So that means Patrick and Ryan are in
16,
their
16. And yeah.
Right.
Younger. But he did connect with Ryan, though. You know, I think of all the boys, he connected with Ryan the most.
Her sons. Who are her sons, Dane?
Yeah, let's talk about the kids a little bit.
Well, of course, I know a lot about Sean. He has brothers, Ryan and Patrick. And of course, everybody knows David. We've talked to
Johnny Ray.
Yes. Really? And we already talked about how much that book meant to us and to him.
James Cagney was my babysitter.
And he said that he was asked about his interest instead of, you know, it being James Cagney talking about who he was. He listened to Ryan's heart and he drew that little picture. And to this day, Ryan has that picture up on his wall. So I think that's pretty neat about Ryan.
And what wasn't that a picture of a little leprechaun dancing or
yes,
a man?
And that meant so much to him. And
yes,
he signed it.
He, mm-hmm. Yes.
And then turned it into a book. I mean, that's pretty neat on Ryan's part. So he said what he wanted to get through in that little book, what sums it all up is that just we need to all slow down and focus on the present and not be in such a hurry, you know, to look to what we're going to do in 20 years from now. Like his dad, Jack was known as being one of the best designers ever. And even Shirley said that. He decorated their home.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Doris told me that Ryan did the decorating for the other Ruby and the Rockets.
Yes, he's a set designer.
Yep.
That's so his job.
So he's just a natural with that. And he gets that from his dad, I guess, because Shirley would just let Jack do most of that. And then there's Patrick. And we talked about him in our last episode where we talked about where he kicked the show star. Remember? That was funny.
Yeah, in the film Music Man.
Yeah, in the film The Music Man.
She was pregnant.
He
and he didn't know.
The bridge scene and he did a kick and.
Surprise.
Surprise.
That's
yeah.
Did you know Shirley did not even meet David until after they got married?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, David didn't even know his dad was divorced until he was marrying Shirley.
Yeah, the kids in the neighborhood told him, right?
Evelyn, his mom, wasn't being very nice about it.
Right. Well, she was upset because, of course, Jack is a philanderer and he was doing his philandering like he always does.
Yes.
So he met Shirley while doing the show. But I think they were having problems anyway before he met Shirley. Evelyn claims, you know, that Shirley broke up the marriage, but there was problems already happening before he met Shirley.
Yes. And David, he was a little boy. He was all 6 or 7 when he found out his dad was
divorced. He was 5.
And he just didn't know. And he said he wanted with all his heart not to like Shirley. He said, I wanted so bad not to like her.
Because he's thinking of his mom.
You know,
he's
I'm reading
only
in
hearing
her,
the other side.
I'm reading in her book, and it says, David came over. And he was a very shy kid, very shy. She's trying to be nice to him. He's standing in the corner. She wants him to come sit down next to her and talk to him. And David wouldn't do it. Well, then Jack got mad at him. So Jack got mad at him because he wasn't going to sit by Shirley. It was a little scuffle there. So in the beginning, it was a little bit of, you know, rough road. But eventually he came around. and would ask her questions about her career. How's it like to be in the movies? You know, what about this? What about that? And that's how they started their relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah, he couldn't help but love her.
And he said he just couldn't help. She was so nice. And he said she became one of his best friends. He could talk to her. He could be.
Right.
He can open up.
Yeah, but you know what I heard too on their wedding day? Remember hearing about this where Evelyn had made David call. Yeah, David had called to ask his dad, Daddy, why are you marrying somebody else?
She put him up to that.
Yeah, she put him up to that. She did. But that didn't work because they got married anyway.
Yeah.
So, and then she kept saying, your son needs you here. You need to come back. And finally he put his foot down.
Yeah. But through the years, Shirley became friends with Evelyn. You know, Shirley had no hard feelings with her.
No.
It was just that, you know.
And that's the testament to what I'm saying. The woman that Shirley Jones is.
I mean, of course, she's a jewel.
You're the wife. No, you want to keep your husband. Well, you want to keep your husband, right?
So she's trying everything.
Evelyn's trying to keep her husband, but Jack's doing his thing. And, you know, Shirley tries to keep her husband, but Jack's doing his thing. So there's no saving him. This is just how it is.
So we have David, who we all know is Shirley's stepson.
Yeah. Yes.
And Sean.
Sean came 8 years later.
But with David, did you know when it comes to Jack, this is something huge with Jack. He's credited with setting his son up with his first manager in 1969.
Then, of course, the boys came along. So.
Sean was the first of those boys.
Sean was the first one. And he liked Sean. He used to babysit him. I was reading in her book, and he used to come over, and he would play with them, and he'd babysit them, and he loved having a brother. He loved it. And Sean looked up to him so much.
Yeah, she was afraid they would have a little bit of sibling rivalry, but it was the opposite.
Yeah, it was the opposite.
Very, very close.
They would have pillow fights and just have fun together, and I think David really loved coming over.
But she worried about
that. Remember Sean would say stuff in his show like, David would come over, and they listen to the radio, and then David would tell him about girls, but that was the end of that story.
Yeah. David taught him how to wear feathered hair.
Yeah. Ooh, I like that hair.
Oh,
Thank you, David.
Sean looked up to him so much. You know, and you know, when Sean became a teen idol, like Sean said, he was just the train was coming. It was just him next. Mm-hmm. And he was going to do it. So because his brother did it, he figured he could do it too. It's a good way to meet girls.
Yeah. The second son she gave birth to was Patrick.
Patrick
Patrick. We won't forget about him. He is very special. He is that director, producer, and teacher, and he's an artistic director in Franklin, Tennessee at Studio 10.
Studio 10 is his baby in Tennessee. Franklin Theater.
And they're doing real well.
They are doing extraordinarily well.
Yep.
In fact, I just read on their social media that they had a little Rodgers and Hammerstein musical tribute to Shirley Jones.
Yes.
For her birthday. And they had
need to go to something like that.
They had it the weekend of April 8th. And I'm like, oh, if I wouldn't have known, I might have tried to go for that.
Right?
Did you know that he broke his collarbone while he was playing, I guess, was it football?
Football.
He was playing football.
Yes.
Because he wanted to be a football player. And I guess he was playing football and got injured.
Yeah, and broke his collarbone. And so that sent him in the direction of where he needed to be. It goes back, you never know.
Yeah, did you also know? I read in the book, too, that Jack had visitation with Patrick one time. And Patrick had this intense back pain. He had a tumor in his back.
Oh, no. No, I didn't read that.
There was a tumor in his back. They rushed him to the hospital. It was non-cancerous, and luckily it wasn't connected to his spine. It was just in his back. That was a very serious thing that happened with Patrick when he was younger.
And Patrick, the way he got into acting, his parents or maybe Shirley, somebody told him, maybe you want to go theater. And
yeah, he didn't want to do the same thing as David and Sean.
He was not about to head on that teen idol bus.
Nope.
That was going to go past him.
He didn't want to do that.
He's too mature for that.
Theater, and he got into musical theater, and that's where he thrived in his acting.
Right.
What are the TV shows on your list that he guest starred in?
Okay, I'll tell you. Well, he starred in CBS television series Dirty Dancing.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. They had a short-lived TV series on.
Yeah, it was based on the real film. He also appeared in the film I'll Do Anything and How the West Was Fun with Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen, the twins.
Oh, yeah, the Full House twins.
In 1997, he had a recurring role on TV with Superman. He was with the New Adventures Superman.
The one with Dean Cain?
I didn't know that.
Lois and Clark, yes. Oh, yeah, because I watch that show every week. Now that you mention it, yes, I remember that. There you go.
So, yeah, he really is talented.
My very first impression of Patrick was...
He's kind.
You can't be any kinder. He certainly very personable. Is his mother's so nice. Son.
Right. Which brings me to this. I want to read you this part in Shirley's book when she talks about Sean being the teen idol. And she said, when Sean went on to become a rock star, as she put it, he hated every minute of it. He could sing and he liked performing, but he always loathed what came with it. And she said David was the main reason Sean became a rock star. He admired David so much that he followed in his footsteps. So Sean, too, had a great career as a famous rock star from 1977 to 79. And she says Ruth Ahrens was his manager. He had 3 platinum albums, 5 hit singles. And she says, however, despite the success he had, Sean was extremely uncomfortable as a teen idol and completely immune to the glamour of being adored by millions and having a vast fan base. Sean ran away from all the attention most of the time.
Yeah, for a while.
Yeah.
But we knew that.
But he did sign that contract with Warner Brothers Records, so he had to do what he signed up for.
Yeah, and, you know, they warned him about the pitfalls too, right? But she said he just shrugged them off, saying, you know, he witnessed what David went through, and he wouldn't fall into the same trap. So hopefully he didn't. I don't think he did.
He did it. And that watching what David went through was like his little learning.
Yes.
So he learned and he knew what not to do and what to expect and how this whole teen idol thing is going to be.
Right.
He didn't have to just get thrown into the deep end. He had some learning.
A brother to lean on.
Girls, well, as far as Sean, in 1978, and we've talked about this before, he sold over 1 million records, over 1 million. And that was huge.
Yes.
He got his gold record for That's Rock and Roll, I think, in 1978. So I'm getting ready to tell you guys all about Shirley. After she had her boys and they're kind of grown up a little bit, and she didn't have to do her musicals anymore.
Well, actually, she said they weren't making them really much anymore anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, in the 60s, they kind of steered away from the...
Yeah.
Musical productions.
They were only stage productions. You couldn't get them in the theaters. Elvis had did the last singing kind of musical show in 1969 with a little thing with Mary Tyler Moore called Change of Habit.
Oh.
So they were pretty much done.
Yeah.
Singing
so
in the movie.
So she caught it at the right time, though, because, you know, that started her off and it was pretty big at that time.
Yes. So we got the movies, the musicals, but after that, we all know what came after that. This little show, we might have heard of it. The Partridge Family.
Back in 1970.
Shirley Jones decides, hey, I can raise my family and work. This is going to be the best of both worlds.
She's been traveling this whole time with her kids.
She's traveling, doing these plays all across the country or across the globe, actually. And now she could come home, take root back in L.A., do a 9-to-5, if you want to call it that, and go home at night and be a mom to her boys. So, of course, she jumps on Mrs. Partridge. Shirley Partridge came along. And you had David Cassidy, who's also in that show.
Yep.
We all know the story, how Shirley looks up at an audition and they look at each other. David goes, what are you doing here? And Shirley goes, what are you doing here?
That's so cool.
I'm playing your mama.
Neither one of them knew the other had been.
Well, I think Shirley had an inkling that David was going, but David had no idea that Shirley was on it. Because they had gone to Shirley beforehand and asked her, hey, we've got this kid trying out, you know, Jack's son. What's your relationship with him? You know, do you get along? You know, they had to find that out first. So Partridge Family from 1970 to 74.
1970-74. We had a singing family based on the cow sales, and it was a hit. We all know that story. It just catapulted David Cassidy into just soup. super, super superstar.
And this was all blindsided. Nobody knew this was coming.
David, it happened so fast, though.
Yes.
Right. So the Partridge Family gave Shirley Jones good, you know, good stability. She could stay home, Patrick, Ryan, and that other one.
Who's that other guy? Sean? That other brother?
You know.
You know that, time that kid that we never list. Think about. We only have a podcast about him. She can stay home and take care of them. And Sean's getting a little older. He wants to dip his foot into the singing and everything.
He was on the set. I think he visited the set, the most of the boys.
Yes, I think
so. On the Partridge Family set.
If you Google it and find on YouTube, there's a whole reel of blue Partridge Family blooper reels. Yep. And he walks right into her scene. She's like, what are you doing in my scene? Yep.
Yes, he felt comfortable already.
He was comfortable. So the
And that was good for him because that helped him later on when he had his Hardy Boy show.
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
And the Partridge Family, we had a whole episode. If you guys want to go back, we have an entire episode dedicated to the Partridge Family that you can listen to. But then that ended in 1974.
Mm-hmm.
And Shirley went on. In 1979, NBC offered her another sitcom.
Yeah, which I didn't even see.
It was very short-lived. It came on. And it only had a half a season. It was canceled in the middle of its first season.
Okay. Yeah.
It was called Shirley. I have a couple of fun facts about that show. Like I said, it was on in 1979 only for a half a season. It kind of had a Brady Bunch feel to it. There was Shirley. The name of the show was Shirley. She had three kids and a stepson. Three kids and a stepson. Well, we all know the Bradys were all steps. So that was a little bit of a Brady Bunch feel. And they had a housekeeper. So they all moved and packed up. And she was a widowed mom. So I was picking up this old Brady Bunch Partridge Family vibe.
There's another theme to the shows back
widowed
then.
Widowed mom, like the Brady, like Carol Brady. Three kids like Carol Brady.
Yep.
Stepson like Carol Brady had three, but she had one. A housekeeper like the Brady's. I'm like, well, come on. All you need is a bus.
But it says they made 13 episodes, so only 13 episodes.
Only half of a season.
Mm-hmm.
Shirley sang the opening theme song for Shirley. Mm-hmm. And the stars of the show, I wanted to make a quick point because I recognized two of the names. Tracy Gold.
Growing Pains.
And the other one that I recognized was Rosanna Arquette.
Yes.
We all know that David Arquette and Patricia Arquette, the Arquettes.
The whole family.
The whole Arquette family. So I was like, oh, I didn't know they had a connection to that show.
Yeah.
So they kind of, remember we were talking in one episode how these people had their beginning on these little TV shows?
Yeah.
That's where the Arquette family had a beginning, Rosanna, and the show Shirley.
But did you know that Shirley wasn't made aware that they canceled it?
Oh.
She was pretty mad at the producer because she showed up and then they said it was canceled.
Oh, that's kind of
like. Nobody told her.
Like how Danny said they went driving to the lot on the Partridge Family, he and his mom, and the guy at the gate said, well, the Partridge Family doesn't live here anymore.
I know. How does that happen? Don't you tell everybody on your cast that you're done?
You would think.
Well, that's confusing to me. Like, why would you not tell them not to come to work tomorrow?
That's a hard hit.
If my job closed down, they would tell me, hey, we're closed, you know.
Read it in the trade magazines. Your show is canceled. No, you need to be telling me this stuff.
Well, you need to get a letter. Nowadays, you have to have a legal letter.
It says in her book, there's no warning. There's nothing. Not a single word from Fred Silverman. So she and Marty were having dinner at a Beverly Hills hotel one time, and she saw him, and she let him have it.
Good. And I believe it.
She yelled at him because nobody warned her that they were canceling, which I guess is, she has a right.
So then after Shirley, she had a little guest appearance on this show called Drew Carey's Show.
Oh, yeah, I remember her on there.
Yeah, she played his older woman girlfriend named Celia. And she did a cameo on That 70s Show in 2000, where she reprised the role of Shirley Partridge.
Mm.
So there she was on that. And then she had some other guest starring roles. on TV, but she went on in 2004 and worked with her son Patrick in Broadway.
Yes.
And they did a revival of 42nd Street. And that was the very first time a mother and a son starred together on Broadway.
I wish I could have seen it.
That's sweet.
So another Emmy nomination role in 2006, she did for a supporting role in a TV movie called Hidden Places. And she also was nominated for the Screen Actors Guild Award, but she lost that to Helen Mirren. But my favorite role was in 2006. She played, and I would love to see this. I never saw the movie.
Yeah.
But she played a nymphomaniac senior citizen in a movie called Grandma's Boy.
Oh, my goodness.
A nymphomaniac senior citizen.
Yeah.
So I'm going to just quickly go through the rest of her roles.
Okay.
And then I want to wrap it up talking about her awards.
Mm-hmm.
So in 07, she came and, Dame, you'll get a kick out of this. She went to the Ford City in Oklahoma City, and she performed during the Centennial Spectacular Concert celebrating Oklahoma's 100th birthday.
While I'm living right here,
on
not
November 16th, 2007.
That breaks my heart because I could have been there.
She's saying on stage, people will say we're in love and Oklahoma at that.
Which we just had in our previous episode.
In 2012, she worked with Patrick again in California in the musical theater revival of The Music Man. And this time she was Mrs. Peru. She was the mom this time.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So, and Patrick was Harold Hill. He was the Music Man.
Oh.
And then she did some TV shows, guest starred in the General Hospital. So
which
now
I never saw.
Mom was in General Hospital. In 2014, she guest starred as Mrs. McClain.
Oh.
But then Shirley Jones, for all of this work in TV and theater, movies, the big screen, she had some accolades. And one of her biggest accolades, the very biggest one, was her 1961 Academy Award for Best Actress in a Supporting Role.
Yep,
for Alma
we all
Gantry.
Know.
But did you know, in 1995, she had a Cable Ace Award nomination for the MTV Awards.
Oh.
So the Cable Ace people gave her a nomination for being on the MTV Awards.
Oh.
And then in 98, cool. She had a nomination for Outstanding Service Show Host for AMC's Family Classic. So the AMC channel had a show called Family Classic. She got a nomination for that. 2010, she was nominated for Outstanding Guest Actress in a Drama for The Cleaner. In 2006, she was nominated for a Primetime Emmy for Outstanding Supporting Actress in a miniseries called The Hidden Places. And in 1970, she was nominated Outstanding Single Performance by an Actress in a Leading Role for Silent Night, Lonely Night. She has some Golden Globe nominees in the 70s and in 1961, I didn't know she was nominated for a Golden Globe for Best Supporting Actress for Elmer Gantry.
Oh.
She had other nominations throughout her career, and she just had tons of them. I could keep going. But the biggest thing that I like, she got her Hollywood star.
Oh.
She got her Hollywood Walk of Fame star right near Hollywood and Vine.
Nice.
And so the list goes on and on with her nominees for Primetime Emmys, movie supporting role, movie guest starring, all kinds of things like that.
Nice.
Shirley Jones
is a great life.
Probably one of my favorite
icon
actresses.
Yeah,
she
me
is
too.
An icon.
She's still down to earth. Like you said, her whole life she maintained that non-Hollywood star quality.
Yes.
She didn't want to really be on that level. She wanted to be
humble, down to earth.
Right.
I have had the fine pleasure of meeting all of the Cassidys except for Ryan.
Except for Ryan.
And Shirley Jones, meeting her at twice. Once she was here in Chicago during the Oklahoma special anniversary screening. And okay. the last time you and I were together,
Cynthia Nashville. Yes, we saw her in Franklin.
And she was so nice. Yes. Even though she was smaller, more fragile, frail, she was still so nice and so kind.
She attended Sean's benefit concert at Patrick's Theater.
Yes.
In Franklin.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, she was right down the road here, and I didn't even know it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in her book, you know, nowadays she lives in Big Bear,
yes.
California. I guess it's a cabin home up in the mountains. And in her book, it says one of her greatest pleasures nowadays is to sit on the deck of her main house at 5 p.m. with a martini mm-hmm. in one hand and a box of chocolates in the other and talks to the coyotes. So she really loves being in nature now.
Well,
and the kids go there to visit her.
They say that that's one of her biggest loves is the animals.
Right. She's always been connected to animals, always had pets. So she's still a veterinarian at heart.
Yes, at heart.
That explains it. You're right.
And that is probably the best way to end this beautiful tribute to Shirley Jones.
And now that she's 90 years old.
Yeah, picturing her with her martini.
What a great life.
Sitting
yeah,
on.
Yeah, still having martinis.
On the deck of her beautiful.
She had a picture, or Sean posted a picture of her 90-year-old happy birthday sash with a little martini pin.
Shirley had an amazing group of boys, an amazing love story, and she's still going strong, and she's just as beautiful as she ever was.
Happy birthday, Shirley, from all of us at the Sean Squad Society.
We all wish you nothing but health and happiness.
Shirley, small town girl makes good on Broadway and in Hollywood. This is America. This is your life. Shirley Jones, Mrs. Jack Cassidy. Thank you, Shirley.
Thank you from the bottom of our teen dream hearts. Keep on crushing.
Always believe in magic.
And have a peaceful, shantastic week. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and subscribe to our new YouTube page.
Make sure to keep in touch with us at our email, shonsquadsociety@gmail.com.
The Sean Squad Society podcast, including past, present, and future versions, and its contents are owned and controlled by the Sean Squad Society. The podcast is written, produced, and recorded at the Borden Studios, and the views and opinions are solely those of the Sean Squad Society podcast. We may think we are always right, but we may get things wrong from time to time, so we assume no responsibility for errors of submission of content.